Every day was Wacky Wednesday at what we called the Maniac Mansion, which was not actually a mansion, but that's what made it so maniacal.
Welcome to the Medical Dads Podcast, a parenting podcast by two dads who happen to be medical doctors. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dr. Stuart Harmon, a pediatric emergency room physician and father of four from Ottawa, Ontario.
I want to be in the podcast.
Daddy, do you know what you're doing?
Can I play a game on your computer?
Daddy, where's Mommy?
And I'm your other co-host, Dr. David Hsu, a family doctor from Toronto, Ontario. Welcome aboard.
Daddy!
Daddy, where are you?
All right, Dr. Harmon, we are back in the new year. We are back for a new episode of Medical Dads.
Welcome to 2024, everybody.
Yes, yes. Now, one thing I wanted to talk about today, because we've been brainstorming topics.
Yeah.
The thing that's been driving me crazy over winter break is this whole business of things breaking down at home and then having to figure out a way to fix it. And lo and behold, because we're home over the holidays for a few weeks, things are bound to break at a higher frequency than usual.
I was going to ask, is this because more things break when you're home on the break? Or is it that when you're home, not out of the house at work, you look around your house and realize all the things that have broken that you haven't repaired, that you've just ignored?
I think it's because you're actually home, and that the word break in Christmas break means that something's going to happen. Something's got to give. Like, in a normal week, my house is just sitting here quietly behaving itself, right? It's just like this shell, right? A little container, but it's empty most of the day, right? And by the time the kids come home at 3:30, 4 o'clock, they've already used up most of their energy at school, right?
Yeah.
We do a little bit of stuff, and then they go to bed. So it contains us while we're sleeping, right? And it sits here empty in the day. And then on the weekends, we got all these extracurricular activities. So it kind of acts as a place where we recharge, refuel, but we're in and out. But winter break, you're there all the day, right? The weather's not good. You can't even go outside. If you do go outside, you come back in with like wet boots or something. Like every little thing that you do in your house while you live with like a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old threatens to break something, right?
That's insightful. I always thought it was Christmas break because by the end of it, I'm broke because of all the money I've spent over the course of the break.
That's a different word. That's called Christmas broke, right? That's a different podcast.
Yeah, that's actually what happens after Christmas when you get that visa bill. Then you're Christmas broke. But Christmas break is when you invite a bunch of family over and kids who don't usually hang out in your house come and start busting up stuff. That's what I think is, that's where the breakings are happening, I think.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. When kids are over and having a good time, and at the end you're wiped out as a parent, you realize you're going to be dealing with something that broke for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks until you figure out how to fix it.
Yeah, it's like
now. I'll tell you what happened at our house over the break, which led up to this discussion.
All right, what broke?
So we're getting to around like December 27, 28th, one of those nights. Like we're getting kind of close to the second weekend, mm-hmm. right? Where New Year's is approaching. And I walk into our furnace room, and then it's the middle of winter. And unfortunately, we have way too much stuff in our house. So in the wintertime especially, my furnace room is packed with stuff. Because there's a lot of this stuff that sits outdoors normally or in the garage during the summer that I feel like in the winter we got to bring it in, right? And namely, this is the bicycles. So I have a couple bicycles sitting next to my furnace. They're really well-heated bicycles, right? And so it's not even easy to navigate into the furnace room at this point, right? So the furnace room is doubling as like extra storage and a miniature garage.
Yeah.
I'm in the furnace room and I'm walking around and I'm often too lazy to like put on slippers or shoes to go into the room. And it's a bit dirty, but suddenly my feet are wet. I'm like, why are my feet wet, right? Like we do have one of these old style furnaces where there is a bit of water that drips out of it. So there's a tube, it leads to a drain. So sometimes there's a little bit of water pooling. But this day I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. The area of the floor that's wet isn't that close to the drain. And I snoop around a bit. And now I have to like take a whole bunch of stuff out of the way because I've stacked things everywhere. There's like a bag of happy birthday balloons from like 3 years ago, right? Which we bust out every time someone has a birthday. So that's blocking the water pipe. There's like a bunch of like furnace filters, you know, those big furnace filter things that you put in every few months to stock up so that I wouldn't be caught unprepared. I bought extra, so they're sitting there on the ground. And since this is a medical household, I actually have like a scale. You know when you go to the old doctor's office, you got to stand on a scale and there's like a ruler and like a balance and all that stuff.
Why do you still have one of those things? Don't you use a digital scale now?
You'd be surprised. It's a litmus test. If every time I bust, we have an old fashioned scale at the office, right? Okay. Anytime like a staff or a medical student comes up to me and is like, I don't know how to use this thing. Can you please get a digital one? That's like a knock against them. Like, how can you not figure out how to measure something? Right? And you'd be surprised how many people have asked me this over the years.
I love this. I love this. I bet all your students do manual blood pressures. A skill that we still have. We could actually do that ourselves.
Yeah. So anyway, I have an extra scale. All this stuff is sitting there. Except now it's pooling in a little bit of water. So I'm like, oh, man, this is a headache. Like, these things always happen when you know, you don't need this headache in your life. Right. Like, suddenly now I'm like, okay, something's leaking. So clear everything away. I take a look. And lo and behold, I see that there's a slow drip of water coming out of the water meter, right?
The water meter.
And so the water meter, for people who don't own a house, is this little device that is counting how much water usage your house is using and sending that information back to the city of Toronto.
Yeah.
Right? And then they'll send you a bill every couple of months for how much water you use. So this thing's leaking. And then there's this big sticker on it saying, you know, you cannot, do not touch. This meter is the property of the city of Toronto, right? So I'm like, okay. So it's like, I think it's like December 28th or something, or 29th. So I'm like, we call the hotline. Yeah. It's after hours.
Yeah.
My dude answers. We're like, okay, the water meter's leaking. What do we do? And then he kind of takes a history from me. He figures out that this isn't a major leak. You know, we're not drowning in the basement. So he's like, you know what you do? You just leave a bucket there. Keep collecting the water. Call us on Monday, right? I'm like, all right. I guess it's like New Year's weekend.
Hold on a second. You're collecting the water so that you can call them on Monday, tell them how much water's in the bucket, and get reimbursed for that money because those machine is charging you for this water.
Yeah, I that's a whole other issue. You could try to get reimbursed for they need to send in a repair team. But I guess he triaged this issue as being not that severe. It's not an emergency. It's like, go see your family doctor on Monday. Don't bother me as a late night guy on call here, right? So I'm like, I'm in a good, cheery Christmas break mood, right? I believe everyone should be able to celebrate New Year's and Christmas with their family. Sure. I don't want to drag a guy out for a few drops of water for no reason. I'm like, fine, I'll call on Monday, right? But lo and behold, this year, New Year's was on Monday, right? January 1st was on Monday. So I woke up on Monday. I'm like, well, I guess I'm not going to call today. I don't want to ruin the guy's day. So we're going to call on Tuesday. January 2nd, I call. And takes forever to get through. And they're like, okay, we're going to send the guy to come deal with this issue. And I'm like, great, because it's Christmas week. I'm home more, right? So I'm thinking at some point it'll work out. The guy will come to fix the thing. I'll be home and we'll deal with it. But
you're envisioning having eggnog with the guy. Y'all sing carols as he fixes the water pipe.
No, I just want my meter to stop dripping, right? So we get into... 2 days, 3 days pass, no sign of any activity, right? Finally, late in the week, the guy shows up, right? Guy shows up, comes into our house. This is where the thing gets really funny, actually.
Guy said, why did you call me sooner? I don't celebrate Christmas.
Guy comes into the house. So the way the water meter is set up is the water meter is next to this valve, right? So the guy's like, oh, first thing I'm going to do, he's got the new meter in his hands. I'm going to put in the new meter. But first thing I'm going to do, I turn off the water, close all the water to your house. He turns the valve a bunch. Valve doesn't close, right? And you can just keep spinning the thing forever. He's like, your valve is broken. I'm like, okay. He's like, well, actually, technically, you own the valve.
The city owns the meter. I knew this was coming.
There are two separate groups, right? So I can't fix the valve for you. You're going to have to hire someone to do that. I can only fix the meter. But he's like, but we have another option. I can go out to the street and turn your water off at the street.
Yeah.
And that'll do the same thing. I'm like, okay, sounds good. So he's like, he goes out onto the street and then he's looking. And so apparently when he says goes out to the street, it means that in your sidewalk, there's a water valve thing. Okay. Right? So if people have walked down like a city sidewalk, I don't know if they do this in all cities, but in Toronto, in front of every house, one of the slabs of sidewalk actually has like a little metal thing in it.
Oh.
Except ours was almost submerged. Like you could almost not see it. I was like, how did you even see that? It was just like this tiny knob of metal, right? So he gets out a chisel and starts like hammering at the sidewalk to open it more.
Okay.
Then basically that leads to this little switch that he can then attach like a wrench to and turn to open or close the water. Yeah. So guy goes into his trunk, digs, comes out with this wrench, tries to turn it. He's like, oh, stuck. Can't turn it. The wrench isn't working, right? I'm like, okay. Like, he goes back into the truck, gets out a second wrench, right? Yeah. This one's a little bigger, right? Turns it a bit, still doesn't work. Goes back, gets a third one. Like, he's got a he's got a series of wrenches, each one getting successfully bigger than the next one. It literally is like an episode of Scooby-Doo, right? Like, where there's these random gadgets being pulled out, and there's like the extra large, and still isn't working, right? At which point, he finally manages to like chisel away a big enough hole.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you know what? The concrete people that laid this, they damaged the pipe. So now I can't open it.
It's the concrete
right?
people's fault.
The concrete people damaged. So he tells me, you know what? You're going to have to call. And what he tells me is, I'm going to call this other team. There's a team of guys that comes and just does concrete for sidewalks and to figure out how to open this. They're going to have to rebuild the switch at the sidewalk in order for me to get the water fixed inside my house. I'm like, okay. So he's like, that's probably going to take a few days. And I'm like, all right. Actually, that's not what he said. He said it would happen tomorrow. But tomorrow came, it didn't happen, and took a few more days.
You so immediately know that tomorrow meant a few days.
Yeah, late in the week, very late in the week, I think it was a Friday, this team shows up, and now they carve up a hole on my sidewalk. They get a new wrench all the way down. They rebuild the thing, so now it's usable.
Yeah.
Then they fill it with sand, and then they tell me, okay, there's still this hole here. We've packed it with pebbles. Another team is going to come next week on Monday to lay asphalt over it. But it's usable now, right? And then I was like, well, what about the guy coming to fix the inside? They're like, oh, that stuff? Like, you'll have to follow up with the city about that. So now I look at my thing, and it's like Friday afternoon, 3:10. Right. So I go back in the house. The outside switch should be working. I call the city and I get a message saying the water meter service is only open from like 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. on weekdays. Right. So there's nobody there to answer the phone. Right. So now I'm like, so we got to wait till the next week. Right. Yeah. We go another 3 days. Right. So eventually I have to get on Monday morning. Right. In lieu of going to work and having other things to do in my life, we're now almost like a full 10 days of dripping in the basement, right? I called the city and I explained to them this issue. They're like, oh, that order? Well, it says here that order is closed. Like the work was finished. I'm like, no. The work is not finished. The work at the street is finished, but now you got to come in and do the leak. So they're like, oh, hey, I got to assign you a new work order. So I get a new work order. I come now. They're like, we're going to come to, I'm like, when are you guys going to come? I'm going to be at work today. He's like, well, we're probably later in the day. And I'm like, okay, it's okay. We have help at the house today.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, nobody shows up, right? Goes until late the next day. Finally, it's like day 11 or something, 7:30 PM at night. I'm at home having given up on this. I'm just like, we're just going to keep collecting water in the bucket for as long as we have to at this point. When suddenly a guy knocks on my door. He's like, I'm with the water meter team. I'm like, oh, come in. So he brings the new water meter. He's going to fix the thing, right, which is great. He fixes it, disconnects the old one, puts in the new one. Actually, this story is just too long. I even missed a part.
The part with the talking dog, but he comes in with his oversized hammer.
There's a part where that little knob that was broken.
Yeah.
Luckily, I called my own plumber. And he's like, oh, you're lucky. This valve is shaped in a certain way that I don't need them to turn off at the street. I can just fix it for you quickly with like a plumbing trick.
Oh.
So he manages to come in with a bunch of towels, pulls the valve off. It starts gushing water, which he immediately covers with a towel.
Yeah.
And then puts the new one on, screws it tight, and we're good again.
Okay.
I was like, whoa, that was impressive. Because had he not been able to do that, there would have been this whole other rigmarole where at some point, in order for me to change the valve, I would have to call the city to shut off the water again, right? And so he just saved me a little bit of money to do that. So now we're almost there. Now in the nighttime, the guy comes from the city to fix the meter. He fixes it, but then he tells me it's fixed, it's working, but it's not programmed, right? There's another guy that just comes and does the programming of the meters.
Like,
he's going to put in a request. They should be here in the next few days.
Like, but in the meantime, don't use the water because it'll be free if you do at that point.
He didn't say if it was free or not, but he said He said that because he's the nighttime water emergency guy,
yeah.
right? And so because our job had got pushed off so late now that it turned into a nighttime job,
yeah.
he's not allowed to stay here for too long because he has all these emergencies he has to attend to. Whereas the programmer can more leisurely spend an hour programming stuff, yeah. I guess, right? So as of today, right, it's the Friday, it's been another week since all that has happened.
Yeah.
The water is not dripping, but there's no sign of this final repair.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know where the programmer is, but someone did come and lay the asphalt down 2 days ago. So at least the hole on the sidewalk has been closed.
Right.
So we're slowly making progress, but it's shocking to me how this little water meter leak yeah. has triggered about 6 different teams of people to have to take a look at it. And we're still not done, right? There was me. There was the initial water meter guy. There was my plumber. There was the sidewalk guy. Then there was the asphalt team. Then there's the guy that actually repaired the meter. And now we're waiting for a programmer. Right?
I love it. I love it. When one of these guys shows up in your office being like, I have chest pain, that's when you're going to say, oh, whoa, okay, yeah, I you need the cardiologist. I got to make a referral to the cardiologist. And then when the cardiologist says, well, it's not your heart. I think you have like heartburn. You need to take an antacid. Oh, can you prescribe me an antacid? No, I can't prescribe you an antacid. That's the GI guy who prescribes you the antacid. GI guy's going to say, I don't do that. That's below me. You go back to your family doctor. They do that.
Right. Except your family doctor's off for the weekend.
Yeah,
right? So you get a phone message saying that if this is an emergency, go to the emergency room. And next thing you know, you don't know where you're supposed to go.
Definitely the emergency room is like that guy at night who's like, oh, yeah, no, I fixed this, the emergency part, but like, I can't help you with that actual day-to-day problem that's been going on for months. Like, I know you. I just ruled out something else, but that problem you actually came in for, you got to go back to your family doctor for that during the daytime.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what to make of all this. It's just crazy to me how when one little thing breaks, right, that you just can't get it fixed properly, right? Of course, in this case, it's a water meter, and you're not even supposed to touch it from a legal perspective, right? Like, if you damage that thing worse, good luck with it. But then rely on other people to fix it for you, you almost feel like you're not any better off, right? If you had just a little bit of skill, you probably could deal with half of these problems. But unfortunately, we don't have a little bit of skill. We have no skill.
How long would you have had to spend on YouTube to find the video to actually fix this thing yourself? What? And then just call them and say, hey, the meter's broken. The water works fine, but the meter's broken.
The finding of YouTube videos is not the problem. Like, I find that YouTube has a very robust search engine. I've been able to locate like basketball games from the 1980s with great efficiency. The problem with it is when you actually try to implement the repair that YouTube tells you to do, there's always some little monkey wrench that gets thrown into the whole thing, right? Like, you're
usually
doing
the videos
it and
are
like,
by people whose actual job is to fix these things. So they'll take you part of the way, and then they'll get to the sort of point where they're like, and here clearly you can't do this.
It's never that obvious, right? It's always this frustrating moment where suddenly something goes wrong like I'm trying to fix the knob on the sink and suddenly I find I'm stripping the bearing and I don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
And there's no exact YouTube moment for that moment of panic for me.
Yeah. On YouTube, they've always seemed to have like almost the same model number of thing that you have, but slightly different.
Right. So that's the rub. So our issue today is, how do we fix stuff around the house? And maybe we'll take people through some examples, because this Toronto Hydro thing is clearly an example of how I did not get anything fixed around my house properly.
Yeah, it's like there are the things you can fix yourself and you feel pretty proud of yourself when you do it. Or I guess along the same lines are that the things you install yourself or the things you like build yourself that you could have hired someone else to install or build.
Generally speaking, and I think people who've listened to our show before, they know I am not a very handy person when it comes to this stuff. I actually abhor doing any of these tasks. The toolbox to me is not unlike a casket. It's where all these dead projects go to die, really.
I'm not quite in that same boat. I'm not a super handy guy, but I do have a toolbox and will try to fix a lot of these little things myself and have had varying degrees of success. But recently, right, the lights burnt out in the hood fan. We We have a hood fan above the...
lights burned out. I'm good at that. I can change a light bulb with the best of them. That was one of my Christmas break tasks. I changed a bunch of dead light bulbs in a day. I was quite proud of myself for that.
Well, we had specifically those ones in the hood fan. My wife came to me and was like, yeah, I went to go to just change the bulbs, but grease or something must have got inside and they got stuck. So now there's just a broken bits of bulb that are stuck in there that won't come out.
Right.
It's like, all right, am I handy enough to take some metal pliers and grab the exposed bulbs and pull them out? I think that I am.
Well, that's not that difficult of a task. That's not even an installation. That is, I guess that qualifies as fixing, but it does seem like you are bragging about unscrewing a light bulb, essentially.
I mean, we've got escalating levels of projects that we've done ourselves around the house. Installed light fixtures, installed our own storm door. Like, we ordered the storm door. We didn't build it from scratch. We ordered a storm door and installed ourselves. You were talking at the beginning about having your bikes in your basement. We don't have that issue because we have a shed in the backyard, and it's one of these sheds that we bought, and then you have to assemble it yourself.
Okay, so see, this is what I'm talking about. This is ambitious, right? Now it sounds like I'm talking to a real handyman.
Well, there is a big difference between like having something like a prefab shed that still has a lot of pieces, but you put it together yourself, not unlike, you know, putting together IKEA furniture, you know, that versus people who actually build a shed from scratch. That was more my dad's style. And he'd build these things to last. He'd pour concrete and make a base and all stuff.
It didn't even occur to me that was an option until you described it just now.
Yeah, I grew up in a house with lots of these types of projects. My dad did it himself or started himself and then got bored of the project and then moved on to a different project. So he had a lot of half-finished projects in my house. And that's not an awesome way to live.
Oddly enough, I grew up in a similar household. My dad did a lot of this stuff himself too. So he would build his own bookshelves. That was his thing. So we have a ton of these bookshelves in my mom's house. They're all incredibly sturdy because the wood that he would go to buy to make these things was way better than the wood you typically get from these crappy bookshelves that you would get at IKEA, right? Or at the Chinese furniture outlet. So, but the thing is, yeah, these things take a ton of time to do, right? But didn't pass that gene on to me, I gotta say.
I guess it probably is because of my dad that I am willing to tackle some of these projects. Or I recall some projects when I was a kid that my dad had not finished, or he was not. It was not uncommon for him to do something like, "Okay, I've repaired the taps, except for that before when you put the tap towards the blue side, it was cold, and when you put the red side, it was hot." Or when you put it to C, it was cold, and H, it was hot. But now you just have to get used to the fact that that's reverse now. Now it's the other way around. So we had that once, and my brother and I were like, all right, well, like, we saw what he did to put it together. Surely it can't be that challenging for us to disassemble it and put it together what it's supposed to be. So that, I think, was one of our biggest successes was undoing his tap repair to actually make the tap run hot and cold in the right direction. That was quite
gratifying. It sounds like a lot like a book that my son read when he was smaller called Wacky Wednesdays, right? It was a book where like every page you would open to, there was something wrong with something in the house, right? So there's a shoe is on the ceiling, right? A person's like, the clock is backwards or something. So, and you're supposed to, as a kid, point out what was abnormal about that house. It sounds like your house could have had a lot of these examples.
Every day was Wacky Wednesday at what we called the Maniac Mansion. Which was not actually a mansion, but that's what made it so maniacal.
All right, so
maniacal.
I don't think I have much to say in this category of things that we've done, because you've taken all the wind out of my sails with this building your own shed business. All right, I'm literally stuck at changing light bulbs. What else did I change recently? I think there was I installed a door stopper. That was a big one. I had a door stopper that. You know those little things that go boing, boing?
Yeah,
boing.
Yeah,
I had one that had kind of gotten what had happened was we got a new door, and the new door sits slightly higher than the old door. And as a result, the old boing, boing, boing thing didn't work properly, and we needed a stiffer one,
yeah.
right? So I had to go out to Home Depot, buy like a stiffer door stopper and exchange it. Turned out to be relatively easy repair. Just had to like screw this one thing into that hole in the ground, in the baseboard.
Hey, everybody's got to start somewhere. My best memory of those door things that make that sound was playing hide and seek with my youngest daughter when she was about 2.5. She could barely talk, but she loved to play hide and seek at that time. So me and her were the only two people home that day. I was hiding behind the door in my bedroom, and I could hear her looking around and listening, or looking around and trying to find me. And then my foot hit that thing, and it made that sound, which I guess she wasn't used to hearing. It scared the heck out of her. She just ran into my room screaming, like, ah! So I come out from the door, and I'm like, it's okay, it's okay. It's sort of cruel how, as a parent, sometimes you just find it so adorable when your kids are either crying or screaming in terror.
There was a similar-ish moment. It's not related to any household thing, but it's a funny story. We were walking in like a wooded area, right? And the kids, for some reason, they just kept talking about the Venus flytrap, because that is a plant that fascinates them.
Yeah.
That a plant could exist that could suddenly gobble up an insect, yeah. or even gobble up your finger, yeah. if you're not careful, right?
Plant that eats you back.
So then I saw like a funny looking plant that kind of had that shape that looked like a thing that could like claw someone.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey guys, look, it's the Venus flytrap. So my son and my daughter are like peering at the thing, and they're getting closer and closer and closer, right? And I'm right next to my daughter, and she's trying to act like all brave about looking at the Venus flytrap. And then at that moment, I take my hand and I just jam it in her armpit, and suddenly she goes, ah! Oh, it was a great moment. Great parenting moment.
Yeah, I love that. Not only do we get to share it on the podcast, but she'll be sharing it as well with her therapist. So everybody gets to hear it.
Yeah. So anyways, back to very frightening things. So typically my reaction when things break around the house is full of fear and loathing. It's like, oh no, there's another thing I'm going to have to do, right? And so I'm very like, try to be careful not to break anything.
Yeah.
And then I'm always thinking in my head that there's this clock. It's like the 10 to 15 year clock, where if we get to 15 years, we'll just renovate the whole thing. I'll just pay someone to fix it all in one shot.
We've got so many things in our house that are kind of broken, hole in the wall, some holes in the ceiling, or some stripped off paint in the ceiling that we're not fixing because, well, you know, it's our plan. We're going to renovate that someday. We've been in the house for almost 13 years now, and we haven't renovated jack. So I don't know when it's going to be when we're trying to sell the house. It's when we better renovate that. But that is one of the first traps of never fixing something in your house is the idea that, well, one day we'll fix it all at the same time because that whole room's going to be better.
I'm trying to think. I'm definitely not one of those dads that goes to Home Depot a lot, right? Like, I remember as a kid getting dragged to those stores all the time by my dad,
yeah.
right? Like, every weekend it seemed like we'd have to go to Canadian Tire, or at the time there was a store in Toronto called Pascal's. She would always be like, okay, we got to go to Pascal's. And at that time, you had no choice as a kid, right? You're just going to have to go. I think that's where my love of reading developed, because the only way to pass the time on these trips was to carry a book with you while you're standing in the aisle and your dad is looking at different sizes of screws for 30 minutes, right? He's taking the one screw that he bought, comparing it with all the other ones, and you're just ready to go, right?
Yeah. Oh, so many memories of that type of thing. And as much as I was talking about how as a kid, my brother and I would sometimes reverse the damage of my dad's project. My dad is a much better handyman than I am, like hands down. And him now, compared to him when I was growing up, I think his skill has only gotten better. So he can actually finish projects now. But these trips to Home Depot were terrible. And being a kid helping your dad with projects, some kids have these memories of hammering their nail like alongside their dad. All my memories are of me handing my dad a nail. And being so bored, staying there for 2 hours, doing nothing but handing nails. Being told, no, hand it the other direction. Hand it point side down. Point side down, son. How many times did I tell you that? Oh, gosh.
Oh, that feeling of boredom, that feeling as a kid where it's like you have so many better things that you could be doing at that moment.
Yeah.
Right? But instead you're stuck here idling. That's the feeling that sticks with me. Every time I think about my dad in the garage asking me to hold some wood for him, or he used to be in the car repair. There was a time where he was always like lying face down face up under the vehicle doing something or the other, right? Those are ridiculous memories, actually, as we walk down nostalgia lane.
That's funny. I think my kids are going to grow up, and this is exactly what they're going to be saying about when my dad would make me watch a movie that was older than 1980.
So sounds like you've accomplished a bunch of stuff around the house.
Little things, now, little things.
Where is your line? Where is the demarcation between when you're ready to do something yourself or when you're ready to call in help?
Yeah, often it's first looking at, okay, are there tools that you need, specialized tools for this project? You know, like a clogged toilet, for example. You've probably unclogged plenty of toilets in your day. Once you've had at least one kid, the toilet gets clogged with something somehow, one way or another, right?
Mm.
But have you ever had to buy anything more than a plunger to unclog a toilet?
Well, my problem is not so much the toilet, it's the sink. The sink in our house is always getting clogged.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah, we have problems with sinks.
Yeah, so I think we talked about it. I think in some episode early on in Medical Dads, you talked about how valuable it is to buy a snake and keep one around the house. So actually, I did that, and it has become super handy. Awesome. Right. So there was a day, I must say, there was a day last fall when my mom was making dinner for us, but suddenly the cooking of dinner had to stop because her sink was clogged.
Yeah.
So she calls me. I'm on my way over. I'm like, okay, well, I'll bring the snake, right? And the funniest part is my sister and my brother-in-law were already there with these twin plungers trying to plunge this thing for her and getting nowhere. And then Mr. Fix-It, older brother, shows up with the snake and clears up everything so we can have dinner on time, right?
Nice.
So the snake actually works. And I'm joking about this because my sister is actually amazing at handyman work, right? But this one device I have that she does not have is the snake.
All right, so you still have your handyman moments. You're not completely a
Yeah, but my moments are more related to cleanliness and function. They're not really related to repair work, right? Like, I can wash dishes with the best of them, and I'm really good at folding clothes. Like, these kind of, like, housewife tasks, I am good at those. But house dad tasks, nah.
You know, sometimes it comes down to, I'm sure you're probably going to get to this as well, sometimes it comes down to the time it's going to take me. Is the money it would cost me worth the time it would take me? So where does that balance out? So that's part of it. But I think the other thing that's not always as obvious is there's sort of three zones. There's the zone of, I can do it myself and it's going to look good. I'm going to be happy with the way it looks. There's the zone of, I can do it or someone else can do it. And like, how it's going to look is going to be like not that good. It's not going to be as good as I do it as if someone else does it. And then there's that zone of, okay, yeah, basically the only somebody else can do this. Otherwise, it's going to just look like so bad that it's not passable. And so it's that zone in the middle where you're kind of drawing your line and saying, all right, well, how much can I accept just how much it's going to look like I did it myself?
You know, as you're describing that story, or as you're describing that scenario, it made me think of a very specific example that drives me crazy. All right, this is definitely the thing that anyone can do, but a professional can do it so much better. Yeah. And that is caulking. You know, like when you have to caulk that little line of right in between like the edge of your bathtub and the tile and smooth it out. I hate that job. That job on YouTube looks super easy, right? Like the dude lays a line of caulking, his finger's wet, or he's got a little sponge, and then he just smooths it out and it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Whenever I try to pull this stunt, I can barely get the caulking out of the gun, right? Half the time, eventually the caulking starts bursting out the back of the tube, right? Because I'm somehow applying the pressure through the caulking gun abnormally. So I've broken like half a dozen of these caulking guns.
Yeah.
Luckily, they only cost $2 each, but maybe that's why they don't work properly half the time, right? And then invariably, I buy like this long tube of caulking.
Yeah.
I caulk like two lines. And then the tube expires, right? Like, I'm not caulking every week. So eventually the tube expires. I throw out 90% of the product or the tube bursts. And now I have to buy a new one. I'm always in Canadian Tire buying more caulking and another gun. But I don't know how to do it properly, right? It always comes out looking like a kindergarten kid smudged white stuff all over the side of the bathtub.
I feel like there's all these unspoken caulking jokes that kind of tell themselves, especially as you're talking about, you know, handling your own cock. But then the alternative is to hire some guy to handle your cock, and you're just like, this is a lose-lose situation here.
It is really a situation for losers. There is no doubt about that. I am curious to poll our audience. How many people do their own cocking on a regular basis?
I'll tell you right now that I haven't ever tried to do my own cocking. Well, I don't know. Maybe one time when I was like a teenager, when my dad, because my dad had all the equipment for this and stuff, I used what he had already had out to do like a small job, but I never tried it myself. And we have some cocking that needs to be done in our house right now. And I don't even know, who do you call for this? You know, like a plumber takes care of plumbing, but is there a cocking specialist that he just does that?
I don't know. That's the problem with that job. It seems so trivial of a task, right? And you know, when you call a trades guy to come do this, right? You know, for them, they can do this in 5 seconds, but they're going to charge you $80 just to show up at your door before right. they've even started, right? Like their transportation costs. So that's the thing that really gets me about this, but I can never do it properly. But I'm surprised that you've been able to live with having never attempted it. I don't feel so bad now about my skill set.
You know, the fact that I haven't tried cocking might also be related to the fact that I have a water-soaked hole in one of my ceilings that I still haven't figured out who I'm going to get to repair.
Ah, I see. Okay. So, I mean, okay, so there's one. That's an example of something that we think we probably could hire someone to do, but we don't even know where to go about it. Every time I mention this to people, they tell me to use some app called Jiffy App. Right, where apparently you can get these like online quotes. You take a few photos of the work you want done, and some contractor in the neighborhood will give you a quote. And then if you agree, then they'll come in and do it. But I've never actually, you know, bit the bullet and used it.
I should look into that. I just don't know if I want to send like a bunch of pictures of all this things wrong in my house out there to the internet. How about holes in the wall? Have you ever tried to forget what the name of this thing they put in drywall holes is? Like that drywall putty, sand it down, and then repaint it?
I've never gotten that far, no. That particular, anything to do with walls, I figure, is being saved for the renovation day.
See, I've done it at my mom's place, one of her old places, when she was planning on leaving the place. And she, you know, she wanted it done. She wanted it done fast. There was a lot of holes to do because kids had been out of that house for a long time.
And she didn't care if it was done well, apparently.
Yeah, like her threshold for just how good it looked wasn't that high. As opposed to some of the holes I have in my own house, where to do it to the satisfaction of all members of the household, that's where the risk in that is too great for me to just go ahead and try that.
This seems like a bit of a paradox, which I will point out, because it seems like you haven't noticed the paradox, is that your demands for the appearance of your wall are so high that you won't fix it yourself. But you're willing to leave it in a state of complete disrepair with holes indefinitely in exchange for that.
I mean, that's the first rule of any repair guy's credo, right? Is you know, they charge you a certain amount for a job if you're going to watch them. Right? They charge you a little bit more if it's a job and you're going to try to help them. And they charge you the highest fee if they're going to do a job that you already tried to do yourself.
So you're purposely leaving it alone so that you can get a better price.
Yeah, so that the next person who comes in is just, okay, I just have to repair this thing. I don't have to first undo your repair and then completely redo something else. Right?
Oh, I actually had a funny repair that it's not even much of a repair. I had on the outside of my house,
yeah.
I have these fence posts, right? So there are these like sticks of wood that a bunch of bees have decided they enjoy burrowing into,
yeah.
Right? So every summer, there's a bunch of these, I think they're called carpenter bees. They burrow holes into this wooden post and then set up a nest inside, right? Yeah. And it's fascinating because it's a lot of work for them to do this, but Fix It Dad decided, I'm going to go to Home Depot and buy like a filler, right?
Yeah.
So they sell this thing. It looks like it just looks some sort of filler for holes in wood.
Okay.
Right? It's like a cement-like compound. And I flushed all the bees out. I watered the thing, let it dry, you know, cleaned up all the honey that was brewing around there, and then filled the holes as much as I could with this like concrete stuff. And within a week, they had burrowed holes right back in through the concrete. Like, that stuff was useless, right? I don't understand their fascination with this particular fence post that they really need to live inside there.
I love that they're wrecking the fence post, and that we call them carpenter bees. Like, really, they should be called just regular guy bees, because that's who comes and destroys the post.
Yeah, we should probably hire the bees to join our team as the fix-it medical dads.
They're on our side. The contractor can be bees the official.
They can be the official logo of the medical dads fix-it squad. It'll be a carpenter bee.
Hey, how about things like installing towel racks, hooks, toilet paper racks? Have you ever had to deal with that?
Oh, there's this whole business that, like, at least one of, like, the parts of the base of the toilet paper rack should be put right into the wood, right into, like, the what is that called? Into the studs.
Okay.
Right? Like, yes. Always, right? It frustrates me no end, because ideally both of them should be fitting into the studs, right? But no toilet paper holder is ever wide enough to need that, right?
I guess you could buy a towel rack and use it to put toilet paper on. Load up like five rolls side by side, so that it's, instead of towels, it's just all toilet paper that you can roll down there.
Now, the funny thing is, with installing these racks, is so you always end up with this thing where it's like, if you put it right in the drywall, then with your kids banging around on it and tugging on these racks, eventually it's going to fall off. Like, my son likes to use the towel rack as some sort of gymnastics pole.
It's a pull apart.
Like, why do you need to do that, right? Right? And I know, because that there's a bar we have in our house that my sister installed, and she showed me. She had this fancy, like, one of those little plastic things that goes into the drywall, and it's rated to hold like 1,500 pounds or some crazy number, right? But I'm always skeptical of that stuff. Right? Because you always put that stuff in, but does it really hold 1,500 pounds as my son is swinging from bar to bar? It's hard to say.
It might hold 1,500 carefully placed stationary pounds, but it can't hold like 40 pounds of swinging, jerking, spinning weight. Well, we like fools, when we got our house at the time, you had the option of getting the standard towel racks and toilet racks placed, or you could delete that option, is what they said, that you could delete it if you planned on getting your own fancier, nicer ones than just the base one. And our thought was, oh yeah, instead of paying for their deluxe ones or settling for their, like, basic ones, we could delete them all, and it would be cheaper for us to buy nice ones that we can install ourselves. And so in my house, you'll see, we have a couple of rooms with a pretty nicely installed towel rack that you wouldn't come in and immediately say, oh, you did that yourself. Then we have like another room or two where there's a towel rack, a toilet paper rack, or just a towel rack, but not a toilet paper rack, where you could say, oh, yeah, it kind of looks like you did that one yourself, huh? Or it looked good when it first came in, but now it's kind of loose. And then there's still rooms yet where the toilet paper just sits on the back of the toilet, or the towel is just on like a hook that we hastily threw up.
Now, I have a trick for this type of task. All right. This is my trick.
Okay.
Whenever we actually get a trades guy to do like a real project. So every few years, like, and unlike you guys, we have had some renovation work done in our house. Like, we had to redo the sink of our laundry room because it was really old. And there was a washroom that we had to redo at some point because we hadn't done it when we initially moved in, because ours was an older house. So anytime you get one of these dudes in at the end of the project, you suddenly be like, hey, I got like three other little things to do. Can you just throw these in? I'll give you a couple $100 extra, right? So they wrap up their job and then they do a few of these extra jobs.
Yeah.
And they look good. The only problem is none of it's painted, right? So I have like rooms where, like, you know, they took off the old broken toilet paper holder and put in a new one.
Yeah.
And it looks great, but now there's like a little gap of paint on the wall, right? Where the paint isn't finished. And that is one of those things I never get to, because it's like, paint, who cares about paint? The thing works properly is good enough. I'm not going to the store to go buy a can of paint, try to match the paint that I have to fix this, to touch up the little edge around the toilet paper holder. But I think that this is the type of stuff some people care about.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We have painted rooms, but when you start saying, I just want to paint this one area where something got stripped or it's not as easy as it sounds, because you can never match it just right. So then it looks odd. So that it's like, well, I'll do this when I can get around to painting that entire wall, when I renovate this room. And then after a while, you stop seeing these unfinished things or these things that are broken.
See, this is the thing I was going to, I wasn't intending to talk about this, but it's been on my mind for a while. Yeah. And it seems like the right time to talk about it is that I feel like the way we're describing our homes and our life is actually a way that should be validated openly. Because I feel like we live in a society that only validates like a perfectly beautiful aesthetic, right? Like your home should be like the homes on TV, right? Your home should be like the homes in the magazines, like in Better Country Living and all that stuff, right? Yeah. Like those homes look like, well, they look like someone spent 10 hours setting the cushion exactly right, touching up every little paint for the photo shoot. But a real life home with children, no matter how much money you have, no matter how much money you have, when you start moving into that home with your kids, will look like a pile of doggy doo-doo within 5 years. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're a responsible parent, you just have to live with that. You either are spending time fixing it all yourself in your side time as a side gig, or it's just these tasks start to accumulate and there's nothing wrong with it. My basic thing is we should just celebrate that things are working. Like, it, of course, things should be working. Like, yeah, it's no good if you don't even have a toilet paper holder at all.
Yeah.
Right. Or if your lights don't work.
Yeah.
But as long as things are working, we should just champion that as long as it works, that's good enough. That should be the medical dad's creed.
Medical dads, our motto is good enough.
No, or just function over form.
Function
like
over
that's
form.
A nicer way of saying it.
I'm certainly always saying to my kids when they break stuff, see, this is why we can't have nice things. Although I can't end this podcast without acknowledging our secret weapon when it comes to some of this stuff. My brother-in-law, my sister's, or my wife's sister, she, her husband or her partner is a cabinet maker.
And all right. You've mentioned this before.
Yeah. The best repair job we ever did in our house is when we had an idea for a sort of coat rack that we could hang up on the wall. And we said to my brother-in-law, for this thing that we want to put on the wall, do you think we need drywall screws, or do you think we could just put the screws straight in the wall? Which led to him saying, oh, what is it that you want to put up? What does it look like? Oh, you want that? And then us saying like, well, you know, we would like something a little nicer, but this is the one that we thought we could do ourselves. And he's saying, well, what's a picture of one that you wish you had? And my wife finds a picture online from some magazine of this is what we wish that the coat rack by the door looked like. He's like, oh, well, I could build you that. And boom, we had an awesomest coat rack. And all I had to do was ask about nails. So anytime there's something that needs a serious renovation, I'm always saying to my wife, well, why don't we just ask your brother-in-law, you know, if we are going to make an entire kitchen island, what type of nail would we need to put in the floor? Just a regular nail or a half-inch nail?
See, the problem with that, and that's a great story, the problem with it is just that it, like, you can't be getting handouts constantly as a physician, man. Like, you got to pay money sometimes, right? Like, we should be grateful that such great relatives exist, but we can't abuse the fact that there are relatives that consistently.
Yeah, and we do often pay the guy to do some of these things. But instead of asking, hey, can you do this job for me? You just mention that you're doing a job yourself. I'm not asking. I don't want you to do this. I just need some advice.
I've got a drill here, and if you don't do something about it, I'm about to use it. Right? I'm going to drill a hole in this wall if you don't do something to intervene right now.
I just have a question about ladders. Just a simple ladder question. What type of ladder would you do if you had to entirely reshingle your roof?
All right. So before we head out, what are the things that you're looking at in 2024 as things that potentially need to get done in your house? What's burning at the top of the to-do list?
Okay, well, so I'll put them in certain categories. The thing that I should be able to do that I got to get on and do, one of the toilets in the house, the gasket at the bottom of the toilet, I think, has actually dried out. And so the toilet always, once you turn the water flow onto the toilet, the back of the tank never fills up. It just keeps draining and draining and draining and draining. So I think I can just buy a new gasket that doesn't look all shriveled up like the one we have, replace that, and I think this toilet will be completely functional again.
Okay.
So that's all one. Right. And then there's the category of things that I probably need to get someone else to do, and that's the water damage to the ceiling in one of the rooms in our house. I think I probably could repaint it, but it's in one of those stippled ceilings. You know how some ceilings have that like popcorn texture right. to them? And yeah. Since I'm not keen on like removing that from the entire ceiling and completely doing it myself, and I think that if I try to do it myself by just painting over that one part, it's going to look really odd that most of the ceiling is stippled, but not this one like area. So I got to hire someone to do that. And I got to figure out who's the person who comes and does that.
All right. So for me, I would say that the thing that we're thinking about at some point is we need a new kitchen. My kitchen has been completely falling apart for the last...
We're talking about gaskets and toilets here. Like, oh, I just need one little quick thing. My entire kitchen.
Every half of my kitchen cabinet doors are peeling rapidly. This is one of the worst purchases we ever made. Within 3 years of installation,
yeah.
the paint started chipping off on any of the doors that occasionally touch water that would drip over the edge of the sink.
Yeah.
And it's just gotten worse since then. And then one of the swinging doors just completely fell off. So if you come to my house, come to the kitchen, the corner cabinet, there is no door,
yeah.
right? And it's like you're in a professional restaurant, right? Where they need to have the tools like right at disposal and there's no time to open and close the doors. That's what it looks like in the corner, right? I've just decided we're going to go with the professional restaurant look at this point because I can't even be bothered to screw the old door back in.
Oh, geez. Yeah, we have some of these things as well where it's just... We really should get on it. It just sits there, but maybe the 2024 will be the year that we finally do something about the exposed wires in my kid's shower.
You're joking, right?
I'm just kidding. We're not going to fix that.
All right. So there you go. We have some goals for the coming year.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't list a single thing that I intend to fix.
Yeah, you just said
you at least listed some. Yeah, but that's not going to happen realistically. My wife and I have had that discussion and we're like, let's just hold out a little bit longer, right? We think that when my son gets to maybe 15, he'll stop damaging stuff in the house and then we'll get some more value out of whatever repair we need.
All right. Dave's goal for 2024, replace the light bulb in his kitchen. Start small. Achievable bite-sized goals.
All right. We will see you all soon on the Medical Dads. Have a good week, folks.
That's right. In the meantime, we'll fix our podcast. See you in a week.